Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, a new book explores the extraordinary escapades undertaken by diplomats and revolutionaries trying to forge alliances abroad in support of Irish independence during the 1920s. Joining me now is Mervyn O'Driscoll, editor of The Irish Revolution, Diplomacy and Reactions, 1919 to 23. Mervyn, how are you today?
I'm very good. But I would point out that I co-edited it with Owen McGee and the late Professor Dermot Kew.
Ah, very good. Thank you very much indeed for that. Bring me back to the days, because we kind of have a feel of Irish independence, and you know, the first Dáil takes place, and it's not quite a bed of roses straight away. There's a road to go. But the idea that we're kind of sprawling out and trying to make contact with other countries, we needed their support very badly, did we?
Yeah, I mean, we have to put it in the context. I mean, the war had ended. You had the Paris peace negotiations starting, and you know, Woodrow Wilson, the American president, was had built up high hopes among the world, including in Ireland, that national self-determination would be for all, and therefore the Dáil, in its one of its very first acts, propounded the message to the free nations of the world, asking for international recognition, and sent representatives to Paris to see if we get access to the Paris peace negotiations. Now, obviously, that was not to happen, and all these aspirations suddenly came to naught. And then, after basically all the major international governments shut down the cooperation with the Dáil, particularly after the Dáil was driven underground. And after that, they set up the Dáil set up a publicity body to counteract British propaganda, and it spread its wings large and wide, and also sought international funding. So that brought it into a very complex and often murky world.
When you say British propaganda, what were they saying about us?
Well, effectively, that the IRA and the Sinn Féin were a bunch of bandits, and this was guerrilla warfare, and was ungentlemanly warfare. But, I mean, primarily you have to understand that all international news about Ireland had to go through London, and consequently it was the British interpretation of events in Ireland that was being propagated, and this very much continued up until, I would say, mid-1920, and a major turning point there was Terence McSweeney's hunger strike, which captured the imagination of many audiences internationally. And for the first time, Sinn Féin began to be able to spread its message effectively.
When you say we were spreading our wings wide and far, what kind of places were we going to?
Well, the book covers all sorts of places. I mean, you have a Chinese poet in exile in Japan who's reading telegrams and Reuters about the hunger strike of Terence McSweeney, and he basically becomes a leading light in the national movement in China. So there's China, there's South Africa, Canada. I mean, John McSweeney, Terence McSweeney's brother, believe it or not, was in jail because he didn't join. He'd immigrated to Canada, and he wouldn't join up, and therefore he was imprisoned for his anti-conscription views, and he was only released in about 1919. Mm-hmm. So there's a Canadian story, there's a South African story. Germany, they were drawn to Germany because of strong connections with Casement during the First World War. And there was, basically a hotbed of international nationalities, Armenians, Egyptians, Indians, and so on. So they were trying to build links with Indian nationalism, with the Egyptian movement, and in the Middle East. So they spread far and wide.
When you put us into Germany now, I have to say, when you read the kind of people they were making contact with at this remove, 2025, it sounds shaky. The Free Corps, a far-right group that would later prove the wellspring of support for Adolf Hitler, They're amongst the people that we're reaching out to.
Well, basically, at this point, they were getting no official support from any government in the world, and they were seeking, they were being pragmatic, seeking support from anywhere they could get it, including, you know, emotional, sentimental solidarity, financial, gun running, and so on. So that brought them into strange, how shall we say, strange friends. It was highly pragmatic. I mean, the Free Corps was extremely anti-British. These were the demobbed right-wing soldiers in of Germany. And they naturally saw the Irish as freedom fighters and anti-British and made common cause with them. But on the other hand, the Irish weren't picky ideologically. They were finding support among communists, social democrats, and so on as well. And even Mussolini in Italy supported the Irish cause, for example, during the hunger strike of Clarence McSweeney.
Right.
So it's a very rich tapestry.
Right.
And there was also, of course, the effort to even build links with the Bolshevik government.
How would that have been seen at the time?
By whom? By Sinn Féin?
In early days of the Bolshevik Revolution, no one knows what's going to come next. So are they seen as just a kind of a, you know, a socialist country that has aspirations to you know, break down capitalism and get a fairer deal for people? Or are they feared throughout Europe as a, you know, an existential threat?
Initially, it wasn't quite clear what the nature of the revolution would be. But nonetheless, there was great caution about it. But as the as Lenin established his rule, it became clear that this was they were envisaging a Marxist-Leninist communist in society. I mean, initially, the Irish in the early days from 1918, 1919, 1920, if you look at Sinn Féin papers, and there is an article or there's a chapter in a book that looks at them in terms of how Sinn Féin perceived the Bolsheviks, and they saw them, there was a degree of incomprehension. They thought, oh, well, these are just simply idealistic motives, and this will all moderate in due course in the Bolshevik Revolution. But they were still cautious about them and dealing with them. Nonetheless, the Irish extended a loan in 1920, April 1920, to the Bolsheviks in New York, a $20,000 loan. And in return, the Bolsheviks gave them part of the Russian crown jewels that had from the executed royal family as collateral. And that led to Ireland seeking to establish official relations with Moscow in about late 1920, 1921, when it had no friends.
God, it's just the cards were just up in the air, really, weren't they, at that point?
Well, I mean, I think you have to understand the world was in turmoil.
Turmoil, yeah. It's fascinating. Mervyn, thank you very much for that indeed. Mervyn O'Driscoll, editor of the Irish Revolution, Diplomacy and Reactions, 1919 to 1923.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.